ironically, Jeremy Piven in that open. He will actually be with me and Jason Swigard on Thursday. He's got a stand-up show at the Roseland on Friday, so he's going to pop in, be live in studio.
He's going to be live in studio.
He's going to be live in studio.
Yes.
That rocks.
Me and Jeremy Piven hanging out on Thursday.
I might sneak in.
Yeah,
lots of entourage sure questions, that, or are you going to stay away and not touch a single one of those?
I've got stand-up questions. I mean, this is a guy that spent his formative years, his parents ran a theatrical training school.
Yeah.
He was an actor. He got his first break in Lucas in like 1980-something and was a working actor for 30 years and then decided to do stand-up late in his career.
Well, he had
after winning... What's that?
He kind of had to, unfortunately, because of the whole, like, Entourage, as amazing of a role as Ari Gold was for him, it kind of ruined his career in Hollywood because people started to think he was literally Ari Gold, and it's like, dude.
Yeah, but either way, stand-up is a tough putt at any point, and going out where you already have an image and doing all that. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to probably stick to stand-up questions, but we'll see. We've got, 10, 12 minutes with him to hang out. We'll see where it goes.
Don't tell him I said this. Sneaky old.
Well, no. Well, again, what? I just said that he was in Lucas. Have you ever seen that film going way back?
No.
Okay.
Look, I'm just saying he looks good for his age.
So you don't want me to tell him.
Do that, not tell him that,
that
I
you think he looks amazing. For his
you
age.
Can tell him that I said that I think he looks okay. good. Don't tell him that I said he's sneaky old. Yeah. I would have thought he'd be like.
Yeah, but that's I think 40s. That's a compliment.
No, it is meant as a compliment. Yeah. I just know I'm scrolling through Wikipedia right now, and when I happened upon his age, I was 50, like, 59? Wow, good for him. Yeah, 59. He'll be 60.
Really? Is that how it goes?
Today? Well, yeah, he doesn't go back to 58 like Benjamin Button?
No, in this month, you big jerks.
We do not.
You can wish him a happy birthday.
We do not have Wanda Sykes this week. No. So
I will say.
That sucks.
Dirt and Sprague. Yep. Dirt and Sprague got Bob Saget in, rest in peace, a long time ago, and I'm just so jealous they got the opportunity to meet him, and Jeremy Piven is one on my list, who I just love and respect, so damn, that's cool you guys are having.
Yeah, well, should be a fun show, so if you're listening on Thursday, do you know the lineup for the week of who's on filling in for these
Nemec
guys?
One day.
I think it's Nemec and Joe tomorrow.
Yeah. Nemec and Joe tomorrow. Do we know who's doing Wednesday?
No.
And a best of on Friday, but I'll be here on Thursday. So, you know what? Just listen in. It'll be a potpourri of voices throughout the week. This week for Dirt and Sprague. Today, it's a big 4th of July weekend, and we had some events that I don't think hit the radar. Joey Chestnut wins his hot dog eating contest. U.S. men's soccer fails to win the Gold Cup. But you get plenty of baseball as you watch your team out there, whatever your team is, all three of us Mariners fans. But you realize coming up on the All-Star break, the next big moment after we finish up with the Midsummer Classic is a trade deadline.
Mm-hmm.
If you are a GM, you see some teams that, feel like, hey, let's stick with what got us here if they're in position to, make a run for a wild card or a division lead. You've got teams that sell, and sometimes it improves them. The Tigers, the biggest standout of that last year. Or you've got teams that just will make big wholesale changes to their lineup. We'll start with the Mariners, but if you're listening and you want to jump in on the fan text line and say what you think your team should do, do you want to see the Mariners make a big move where they ship off, pitching for hitting? Do you want to see them just get a little better in the bullpen, add another bat, get rid of prospects, or do you want to see them, just kind of stick with what they have? The young guys are playing well and getting better every day, and you still expect Julio to pop. Cal Raleigh is absolutely mashing it. What's the move you guys want to see him make? Well,
the Mariners have kind of shown that they're not going to make a move. That's kind of not what
history says.
Do.
Jerry DePoto will not probably make a big splashy move,
right? Like, if anything, really? It might be like a little pickup here, a little pickup there. That being said, I think if Eugenio wants to come back to Seattle, and you can move on from a young prospect or two, not like a Williamson.
Yeah, not
or,
somebody that's playing. One of but, those guys but get rid of up. Some minor league prospects.
Yeah, if you can get rid of, you know, one of your single A, double A guys that's high up on the prospect list, because I know the Mariners have a pretty deep farm system right now.
Best overall prospect list in baseball.
Hey-o.
So I agree. I think that they, if they're able to move on from one or two of those players to go grab Suarez, it strengthens that third base position. I know that Williamson is kind of your third baseman of the future, but right now he's not hitting at a super impressive clip. He's great defensively, but there's clearly some room for improvement there for, between him and Mastroboni, right?
Yeah.
So if you can get Eugenio, a guy who's an all-star again, he's played in Seattle before, you know he vibes well with the team, he can mash, and it does seem like the Diamondbacks are going to be
sellers,
like right? And they're going to already, like, you're already looking at potentially them getting rid of Kelly and Gallen, so maybe you can get Suarez at more of a discount. I think that would be the ideal move for that third base position.
Yeah, they have been known to be targeting in the last 3 weeks or so, at least. I mean, we may have to wait another 3 weeks for a move to come out officially, but the targets for the Mariners have been first base, third base, and relief pitching. That seems to be the holes on their roster. I hate that they traded Suarez away in the first place, but I got to disagree with you guys as far as like the splashy move that never comes in the offseason. But one thing Jerry DePoto has proven to do and willing to do has been deadline deals. Luis Castillo, that big acquisition a few years ago.
Rosarena.
And Randy Rosarena was actually, when it was all said and done, he was the best player traded position player-wise at the trade deadline last year. There were a couple of really good pitchers flipped as well. But the Mariners, man, the guys, they got two relief pitchers at the deadline last year. Two position players in Justin Turner and Randy Rosarena. You go back, you look at other times where they got Luis Castillo, then signed him to an extension as well, and a couple other small midseason acquisitions. I would say this is the point. Stupidly, of course, sometimes it I feel like it's dumber to just give up a prospect and money than at times just to give up money, but this seems to be when the Mariners go all in. So I'm going to say that they're going to go all in again. I hope they don't trade like their very, very top prospect. I believe Colt Emerson, I know you're talking about young kids at single A or double A that they need to maybe give up. Will, I don't want to see them give Colt Emerson or Lizardo Montez up. But then you look down the list like, oh, a Harry Ford, who's probably ready for the bigs now. He's, I'm assuming, a piece that the Mariners would look at trading because he's blocked at catcher by the great MVP candidate Cal Raleigh. There's a couple other lower level prospects as well that are still in the top 100. And if you go off of what the deals were last year, the Mariners didn't have to give up any top prospects for Randy Rosarena, for Justin Turner, for those bullpen pieces. So I think they will make a big splash, but we still, I don't know what's today, 7-7. We're going to have to wait until probably two, maybe 2.5 weeks down the road to see the full trade market materialize. They've been in at least conversations, apparently, on the Orioles' first baseman, Ryan O'Hearn, as well. He just made the All-Star team.
Well, that's another That's another team. Both the Diamondbacks and the Orioles are ones that if you said at the end of last season that they'd be sellers at this time this year, seemed a little far-fetched, but now here we are. And you just look at either of those lineups and go, ooh, okay.
Get Josh Naylor, too, from the D-backs. Just take their entire corner infield.
Well, we've given enough to the Diamondbacks over the years that taking stuff back wouldn't be...
You're welcome for Ketel Marte, you jerks.
Yeah, no kidding.
I'll trade that 3.5 years we got out of Haniger for Ketel Marte's MVP candidate seasons every day of the week.
Jordan, you seem to be pretty dialed on the farm system. Do you have any idea where Victor Robles or Ryan Bliss are in their recovery?
So Ryan Bliss is most likely out for the rest of the year. Okay. They were both actually recently with the team on a road trip. They've been rehabbing in Arizona. Victor Robles initially was thought to maybe be coming back around the All-Star break, but his shoulder dislocation on that catch against San Francisco early in the year, it's not great. The injury's lingering, so they're probably, they haven't said officially, but probably most likely out the rest of the year. Same with Bliss. They just don't expect him back. It would be at the soonest September, and at that point, it just makes sense to kind of continue to push him towards next year. So unfortunately, I don't think we're going to see Robles or Bliss, and frankly, I'm not sure we're going to see Bliss ever in a Mariners uniform again if they find an answer at second base like they do maybe with Cole Young. So it sucks.
All right. Well, I mean, if Cole Young is the guy, then
been hitting the ball like really hard, like the cover off the ball.
I don't think he actually has.
Really?
I think you're exaggerating.
I saw it at the Pirates game. The cover flew
right off.
And the ball went yeah. left.
Just,
the cover
just a ball of yarn
right.
just yeah. rolling out there.
You don't
the
remember seeing that clip?
I did miss that clip. I think I mentioned it earlier. We are 47 days away. Now, under 46 and 20 some odd hours until you have college football underway.
Back in our lives.
The NFL less than 2 months away. We're going to do high-level, 10,000-foot view of what you guys expect from the Pigskin. And we'll start with college football because it's coming up next, and we'll do that right here on Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
We're
so handful
close.
Of weeks away from college football starting and just getting football back in. So when I came in, Mr. Ortner trying to skip out on the children is what prompted this. Coaching Hawkinson high school football again?
That is the plan.
You and a friend talking about maybe making a trip down to Vegas. They moved Idaho State and UNLV to week zero. That game will be played at Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas.
Yes,
a lot
sir.
Easier to get in for a running Rebels game than it is for a Raiders game. But getting down there and going to a game to kick things off in week zero, only 47 days away.
Not too far away. Well, and that's the so that was originally a week one game, but I got the inside knowledge over there. The little cousin is a wide receiver for the Bengals.
Oh, there.
And so we got news that, hey, there was a week zero game. I've been meaning to try and get out there. This is going to be his third year with Idaho State.
The Bengals playing at Allegiant Stadium.
Right.
I mean, does it get much better than that?
Well, and I haven't gotten to see him play yet.
That'd be the place to do it.
And he's been playing the last couple of years. Adam Watts, good little receiver. Little player.
All right.
So I'd like to get out there and actually watch a game of his instead of having to scroll through ESPN Plus to find the Idaho State games.
Sure.
So I'm thinking we're trying.
It would be irresponsible of you not to go.
I don't want to be a bad cousin. I'm the older cousin. I need to be a role model.
What was the coolest stadium you ever played in?
The coolest stadium I ever played in, I played in three. Three that were really, really cool. So if you've never been to a game at Montana, you need to do it.
Okay.
And I would say...
Is the sky that much bigger?
It's as big as it gets. There's a reason why they call it the Big Sky Country, and...
Yeah.
It's pretty big.
Okay.
I'll tell you that right now. Very cool environment. Loudest environment I've been in. And it was only half full because we played them. It was like our one COVID game.
Okay.
During the COVID season. So I would highly recommend if you enjoy football. They are a very high quality FCS program. They're in the finals almost every year or, at least in the playoffs.
And what city are they in?
They are in Missoula. So Montana State's Bozeman, Montana Grizzlies, Missoula. It's a very cool stadium too, because when you drive in, you're like, where's the stadium? What you don't realize, you drive in, you're at the top of the stadium. Stadium goes down. Built in. You're right on the field. Great environment. The Kibbe Dome, well, I did think it was kind of garbage. It is a cool dome to play in. That's Idaho, so if you're going, you might be able to do a little double feature, Pac-12, Pac-8 after dark. You can go watch a WSU game.
They going to be the Pac-12 or are they going to call themselves the Pac-8? Because if they call themselves the Pac-12, I cannot watch any of their football games.
I think they're just going to 8.5 because Gonzaga's there.
The 8.5. Yeah. If they were the Pac-8.5, I would have more respect than
That'd
if they
very
stayed Pac-12.
That'd be awesome.
I thought they already said that they weren't changing the number. It's just going to be Pac-12.
That's why.
Well, no one else does, and then they have these ads where they're like, "Welcome to schools with mathematic excellence and academic prowess." It's like you can't count.
Yeah, the Big Ten is 19 deep. What the hell are you doing?
Well, and the Big 12 has 16 or whatever it is. Now it's
dumb.
Very stupid.
Yeah, I agree.
Very dumb. The last one, just because it's got the colored turf, Eastern Washington,
red turf,
the stadium. No. They got to work on that. It's not a great stadium. They need to put some more money into that. The red turf, the Inferno.
Is it Mike Roos Field? Or is it?
It's Roos. I think Roos.
Roos Stadium?
I think it's Roos Field.
I think it's Roos Field.
Because it's him and Cowherd. They're the
Cowherd.
Big donors.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Yep. The great Mike Roos, Mountain View High School alum.
Right.
Class of 2000.
Hottest field I've ever played on. And I think to this day.
Does it make it feel hotter just because it's red?
Dude, I was like laughing about it. I thought it was the dumbest thing of like, yeah. It's going to be hotter than what you think. It was, I think my cleats melted. I also used to laugh at like, oh, you can't see Boise State when they wear their all blues on the blue turf. Cannot. I'm like, yes, you can. It's they're in front of your face. If you can't see them, go to the eye doctor. Playing on the Inferno, Eastern in the all reds. Could not see them. I had to walk back that take. It was not fun. And if you're ever on the field, you might be able to find a bloody cotton swab like tampon thing that was in my nose because it got launched out on that field.
And it's still there.
I wasn't going to pick it up, yeah. So it's still there somewhere.
Yeah, we'll just assume that it is still there. All right, well, that is delightful. So you did not play anywhere near as cool as Allegiant Stadium.
I did not get to play anywhere as cool as Allegiant Stadium, and trust me, I really tried to break in. I've tried. Maybe I'll break in on Idaho State. I'm sure I got one more game left. I got a game of eligibility.
I got an injury. The player's not listed on the roster. It seems to be an old man that just went out there to try to play.
This guy in a cane. What's he doing?
I think that is one of the cooler things about college football is the environment. Some of those time, those neutral sites do not get it. But if you are an Idaho State Bengal, being able to go and play at Allegiant is going to be awesome. It probably will be about half full, I would imagine, because UNLV football is not a huge draw in Vegas. But I think that would be a ton of fun. I remember going to the UNLV games when they played way out near Henderson, whatever the hell the stadium was back then, when they played Wisconsin. Those would fill up, but it was full of Wisconsin fans. And they had a little bit of a rivalry going because I think UNLV played at Camp Randall the year before, and there was some sort of fight or something. So everybody was pissed off and yelling at each other. I went to a couple other games out there, but UNLV football, it's fun.
UNLV, sleeping giant.
They were good last year.
Getting Mullen in there, I think, is a bigger deal than people give them respect for. The NIL, having gotten to practice, actually, on that practice facility.
Yeah.
UNLV... It's beautiful, dude.
Well, more and more sports money is going into Las Vegas.
Sleeping
so
giant.
It's going to be. I don't disagree with that. And there's enough money around there that if they can start getting some donors that really want UNLV football to be good, they could be great. So it'll be interesting to see. Your other Week Zero games, you're going to get Iowa State, Kansas State kicking things off in Dublin. I don't know if there's a lot of individual fans for those schools, but the Ireland games have been packed. Mm-hmm. They've had, of course, Notre Dame playing in a handful of those. So that makes a big difference. But the Dublin kickoff will be the 9 o'clock game. You got Fresno State at Kansas, which should be a good one. Mm-hmm. Sam Houston at Western Kentucky and Stanford at Hawaii. Don't know if Stanford's ever going to be good at football again because they don't really seem to care. But you've got Andrew Luck as part of the program, so maybe.
Maybe they're taking a step forward.
Maybe.
I'll tell you what, I'm biased. I have a buddy that coaches over at Hawaii, so I would like Hawaii to do well.
The one year that I lived in Hawaii was the Colt Brennan year.
Oh, dude.
And that was
awesome.
That
had to have been the best year.
It was awesome. I lived on Maui, so it didn't get as much hype as you would get on Oahu, but being out there, everybody was a Warriors fan. It was really, really fun to be out there. And we had a friend that was living out there. She went to Georgia, and she's like, I'm kind of a little bit rooting for Hawaii, but I don't think they have a chance in the game. And they did. Turns out they did not.
They never usually do, but there is something special. Like, I played with a couple guys who were from the island, have a couple buddies that grew up in Hawaii, and they all talk about it like everyone in Hawaii loves the Rainbows or Rainbow Warriors.
Well,
they're now
just the Warriors.
They were the Warriors.
Well, they were the Rainbow Warriors.
Right.
But yeah.
So I want them to do well, and I think that's a sneaky fun matchup because they're kind of equivalent talent-wise. Stanford, I love that Hawaii also always does the Week Zero game. For whatever reason, it's just like, I know I can tune in, and Hawaii's always going to be playing at some point. Dude, I'm fired up. The Phil Steele book, like, I'm waiting for next paycheck. I'm going right to buy it. The college football video game comes out tomorrow. Like, I couldn't be more jacked up for college football season.
Well, and you get to week one, and you've got Texas at Ohio State as your big kickoff. I mean,
big nooner.
It is going to be outstanding. Alabama at Florida State is week one. You've got, I'm trying to see what the other game is.
There's an LSU, I think it's LSU Clemson. I think that's your night game.
Yeah,
should be good.
Yes, LSU at Clemson will be great. So, yes.
Right.
It's funny to look at college football if you don't break it down into the top 25. There are so many games that are played.
Oh, yeah.
That
oh,
day.
Yeah.
Cal, Oregon State. Actually, I don't hate that.
That'll be a really fun game. It is funny, too.
Utah, UCLA, Colorado State, Washington. Yeah, it should be a...
Idaho, Washington State? Like, it's not going to be a close game, but, like, what? They're separated from by 5 miles from each other?
They're right next
to each
other.
So they all hate each other? Like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Hawaii, Arizona?
And then
that could be halfway decent.
And then because week one is still in August, you're getting Notre Dame at Miami with Carson Beck at the helm in Miami, which is going to be weird.
That'll look really weird.
But that's your Sunday late kick, and you got Virginia Tech, South Carolina starting things off.
Monday.
And then you get a Monday nighter against TCU
you
at
see
North Carolina.
Bill and Jordan, dude, it's going
to
be great.
Dude, Bill Belichick on a Monday night, ready to go. Should be a blast. So, quick expectations. Who are the teams that you think could maybe surprise and get in there? I mean, you've got a 12-team playoff again. Are there any sleeping giants out there that you've got on your
sleeping
radar?
Giants? Not necessarily sleeping giants. There's a couple teams that I'm very intrigued by and intrigued by what they can be. You start going down the list in the Big Ten. I think Illinois is a sneaky, really good team.
All right.
You go through their schedule. It's one of the easier schedules. You still got Bielema over there, and that guy just knows how to win at those tier two Big Ten teams. He recruits the trenches well. They get their quarterback, Luke Altmaier, back. And while he's not going to light up the scoreboard, he's really smart with the football. He's a game manager, which is a dirty word, but it really shouldn't be when describing him because he makes the smart play and he doesn't turn the ball over. That's what Bielema wants. So if they end up being a top four team in the Big Ten, like they could sneak up. I know it's the home of the Ducks. I like what Fish is doing at UW. I think they're a good team. I like that QB. All signs from the Manning Passing Academy. Sounds like Williams was out there just ripping it up. Now he's got to make a lot of corrections to mistakes that he was making as a freshman or a young quarterback. And if he can make those corrections and those steps forward, Jed Fish has proven that he can win anywhere. And so right now, my big deep dive have been on the Big Ten teams. I'm a little bit interested to see what happens with Indiana because they're doing that big recruiting class in the transfer portal again.
Yep.
And just look at FSU last year, Florida State 2 years ago, big transfer class. They, if their quarterback doesn't get hurt, they make the college football playoff, right? They were undefeated all the way. If you don't have Jordan Travis go down, they're the number one or number two seed in the college football playoff. Last year, same thing, big transfer class. And they were horrible. So will Indiana be able to keep kind of the same magic from the year before? What's going to happen there? I'm very intrigued by what's going to happen in Pullman. I think Rodgers is a very smart football coach, and he was kind of the perfect hire for Washington State because he comes from South Dakota State. It's a smaller school, so he knows how to recruit that undersized kid that's angry that they didn't get picked up by the bigger school. Can he transfer that over to Washington State? If you're a Washington State fan, you're not going to throw the ball nearly as much. You've gotten used to the air raid. They are going to pound the rock. So I'm interested to see if they're able to, like, have they found their guy and take the step forward? I think they have. So there are a lot of different storylines going into it, and we've barely scratched the surface here.
Well, it's going to be a ton of fun. I'm looking at this is Athlon Sports. Put it out there. Jordan, they got your Ducks at 9. Ooh. How insulted are you?
I'm not very insulted at all. They've got a quarterback that hasn't been on their team yet. Like, they've got now the Evan Stewart injury kind of puts their wide receiver room back a little bit. Like, I'm excited. They've got some pieces coming in. They've got
cautiously
that
optimistic. Is this one? Where do you put yourself? Where's your
easier schedule?
Where's your fan meter?
Easier schedule, but I think 9 or 10 to start the season. You know, just young running back coming in, really, really highly rated, but just unproven. I think 9 or 10 is a perfect spot for the Ducks.
Well, there you have it with your college football preview. Let's flip gears and look at the NFL from a distance. We are less than 2 months away from the opening kick of the NFL season. Before we get to that, SportsCenter update. Here's Jordan. Nobody does their schedule better with adjusting it for strength of schedule based on where you finished the year before. Always putting your defending champ out there on that first night, putting the conference matchups in the final week of the season. they have kind of figured out the formula that at least has me the most intrigued, and I'd love to see the other leagues kind of tactically put together their schedules in some sort of way. But the NFL is number one for a reason, and part of it is they kick off with a game that I think everybody's going to want to watch. The Cowboys have more fans than anybody else. They also have more disappointment that they roll out every year, and they have Schottenheimer coming out as their head coach.
Not the good Schottenheimer, the other Schottenheimer.
To see what that team is going to look like post Mike McCarthy is going to be interesting to see. And this Philadelphia team has kind of figured out a different way to win. So that's how we kick things off. But I don't need to get into the entire NFL schedule because, let's be honest, all the games are good when everybody's 0-0. There's going to be teams that go from worst to first. 49ers, I think, chief among them. But what are your expectations and who are the teams that you think will be the most interesting, if not the best?
Well, I think right there you start off with the 49ers being the chief among them to be one of the best teams, if not the best team in the NFC West.
And they finished, what, 6-9 last year?
Or 6-10,
I mean. I believe. No, 6-11, wouldn't it be? How many games did they play now? 17.
Yep. Yeah, so
we should do some math.
I was going to say, I believe I can go back and pull up the standings right now. They were the worst team in the NFC West.
Yes.
But as you go through it, I think 6-11. So yep. I think when you look
at the
West.
We knew it was 6 wins. We just had to figure out how to,
we had to do the math on the
6
losses.
From 17 and figure that all out. Won't be long and we'll go to an 18-game schedule and we'll really be confused.
It's happening really quickly because in a couple, I think it's 2027. Dude, they're going to do the Super Bowl the weekend of President's Day.
Which I think the two brilliant moves, dropping preseason games and moving the Super Bowl where you have a Monday off to follow are two things that are, I think, universally beloved. It's going to be some pushback from the players on that 18-game schedule, but the public won't care. I mean, we right. gripe about Thursday night football and how unfair it is to have 4 days of prep between games, but we don't care that much.
Well,
that
no, you're doing Christmas games all the time, which is going to be like on Wednesdays, and you got the Saturdays and Fridays. And
yeah, they tried to work into the scheduling to give players 6 days off still. It doesn't always happen, but you're not playing 6 weeks in a row where you're on 4 days of rest. So.
Listen, there are changes they can make for player safety, but they're making changes for entertainment value. And,
agreed.
That's something that, you know, the viewing public, the betting public, the general sports fan appreciates about the NFL. And let's be honest, we only care about players to a point. I'd like to pretend that I cared more, but they're entertainers.
Well,
and they go out and they roll it out. And, you know, the ones that seem unfair are the one where one team is coming off of a bye and another team's coming off of 4 days rest. I don't think I've ever seen that. Mm-hmm. So as long as it's comparable, I'm kind of okay with it.
Yeah, and the NFL does a good job of doing that, right?
Yeah, because last year you had the Saturday games, and it was basically your two Christmas matchups were set up to play the Saturday before,
and then Wednesday.
And so that they could all get the rest. And it was, I can't remember what it was. It was like Chiefs, Texans, and Steelers, or somebody else. They switched opponents for the next game. But I mean, they do make sure that at least it's an even slate. And I'd rather have, in, you know, for fairness, you make it even for all the teams is better than making it, you know, the best for the players. I hate to say it, but I think that's how most people feel.
Right. Well, everyone cares about player safety to an extent until it affects your viewing schedule that you are used to. Well, the minute it affects your viewing schedule the way you are used to, then you will be upset and everyone will be a candy ass for not being willing to run out there on a Wednesday so that you had something to watch instead of tuning into reruns of whatever on TBS and TNT. But you brought up San Francisco.
Yeah, San Francisco. And San Francisco opening and closing with the Seahawks this year, which is pretty hilarious because in a lot of times you'll see it where they'll play like twice in three weeks or four weeks or whatever it is. But yeah, having an opening and closing. So Niners expected to do better than worst.
But I think it is fascinating when you look at this NFC West. I think all four teams can realistically in their own head convince themselves that they will win the division. Now, I do think Arizona has the hardest convincing because what you're going to assume is that Kyler Murray for the first time in his career would be able to perform better after November than he ever has. Like the minute, like the joke is, minute Call of Duty comes out, he falls off a cliff. In reality, what it is NFL teams get footage of him and they get film of him and they make an adjustment, and either he doesn't make the adjustment back to correct the things that they have now fixed against him defensively, or it's that the coaching staff hasn't helped him do that, right? But I do
think, or you play road games in winter conditions and you have tiny little hands and you've got all of the things working against you.
Right. But you go down the list of Seahawks, Rams, 49ers, and I think they all have legitimate arguments of why they should be the preseason favorite. Now, right now, Seattle is the furthest betting odds-wise from winning the West, right?
I think that's also just because they made the most changes.
Well, like, and that's my thing, is look at that defense at the beginning of the year and at the end of the year. It only got better, and that's when McDonald got his guys into the system. Yep. Offensively, Sam Darnold has proven that he is an above-average quarterback when given time. Now, Seattle, they have to make the changes, and they made some to the offensive line that could help them
use
keep
their first
him
overall
upright.
Pick to get Gray Zabel, and they've switched the entire offensive scheme. Moving on from Ryan Grubb, who had zero NFL experience, to get a Kubiak, who's going to go and run that zone blocking system. Yep. You wonder how much it benefits the guys they already have. But making that change before you make the draft pick and getting... I don't know if you did. You see Gray Zabel's first pitch that he checked out?
I didn't get to see the first pitch. Was it a strike?
It was a dead strike, but that kid apparently clocked a 90 mile an hour fastball when he was in high school. So, he went out there and put some heat on it.
He's an athlete, and they can move him. Like, he's going to play guard. Yeah. But in reality, once he gets, his feet wet a little bit, that's a guy that if they need to move him to center, he can play center, he can move outside. Lucas is finally healthy, so that right tackle position
is locked down. Well,
like,
they're looking at Zabel as being Steve Hutchinson. So, but the other thing about the zone blocking, too, is that you wonder what it's going to do. They may have the steal of the draft in a guy named Damian Martinez. You may not know him as a Miami running back. You'd probably remember him when he was playing here at Oregon State.
Right.
But he, had... injury that put him down the draft board, but that guy's an absolute beast. He had him to Charbonnet and K-9 in the backfield. Right. I'm very curious how that running game is going to look, and if the running game looks good, it's going to be very easy for Sam Darnold, I would think.
100%. And with the zone blocking, it's the perfect type of blocking scheme for a running back like Kenneth Walker, because he is so delayed. Like when Pittsburgh was doing all their damage with Le'Veon Bell, everyone would kind of make fun of Le'Veon Bell because he'd almost like walk to the line, find the hole, and then go. Kenneth Walker is the same type of running back. He's looking for the holes because in a zone scheme, you don't necessarily know where the holes are going to open up because you're reacting to what the defense does, right? Yep. The defense is going to move, and if they're in your zone, you block them, and if they're not in your zone, you don't block them. Sounds simple, harder than you might realize.
Yeah.
But when you have a running back that can be patient, you can run the same inside zone play, and that hole can open up in three or four different spots each time. Yeah. So when you have a running back like Kenneth Walker in this type of system, it can almost expand his strengths, right? So I'm excited about that. I'm excited about the defense. Obviously, San Fran is going to say, well, all of our guys are going to get back and healthy. We could possibly
win
the division.
They're going to say that, but you've got guys that are notoriously unhealthy. You've paid Brock Purdy now a truckload, so you've got your window of opportunity to go out and pay everybody else on the team is pretty much done. So you're kind of dealing with the guys you have on the roster. So this is a make it or break it year for San Francisco, where so far, anytime those have popped up, Kyle Shanahan has made it. But you wonder if this is kind of the unraveling of what we've seen as, the best team in the West for a long time. I mean, over the last decade, they've two Super Bowl appearances. Kyle Shanahan has kind of been the guy running it, but in that time, the Rams have one and the Niners don't.
Right.
So you've got Sean McVay, you've got Matthew Stafford for another go around. They can be good. The Cardinals are always a thorn in the side. So it's a fun division. It's an absolute blast to watch. What chances do you give Philadelphia of making a return visit and possibly winning a second Super Bowl?
Right now, I think they're the best team in the NFC again. Like
better than the Lions, better than...
Lions, you're having to replace two coordinators. You just lost, if not the best center, one of the best centers in the NFL to retirement. Like, you got a long way to go, right? So I do kind of believe it is Philly and everyone else, at least right now in the NFC. The AFC, you're going to have more fireworks with the four quarterbacks over there.
Yeah.
Really, the main three in Mahomes, Lamar, and Allen. Just not because it's
Burrow. Throw Burrow in there, please.
See, well, here, when it comes to postseason success, the defense is bad. The defense is really bad in Cincinnati, and they're not paying
either of their DNs. He almost drug one of the worst defenses in the NFL last year to a playoff after a terrible start.
Which is why I don't throw them in, because not because of Burrow, but because of other elements on that team.
I got you.
But anyways, like I do think the NFC is there's a little bit more of a, hey, what could happen here? Could Washington take that next step forward? Do they fall back a little bit because now teams are paying attention? What's going to happen in Chicago? Can Detroit reload? What's going to happen with Green Bay? Atlanta, is Penix going to be the guy? So the NFC, man, there's so many different ways it can go and move. And if anyone tries to tell you this will for sure happen in the NFC and they're not talking about Philly, like, good luck to you, man.